Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Thursday. We're at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Bar Lines. And coming up on Sunday, an annual event that we're always excited to promote, the Scott Hamilton and Friends, benefiting Scott Hamilton Cares Foundation, coming up at Bridgestone Arena Sunday at 4 o'clock. You can go to the Bridgestone Arena box office or bridgestonearena.com to get your tickets. And Scott Hamilton, Olympic gold medalist, joins us now. Scott, good to see you, my friend.
Oh, it's so great. This is awesome. I just love coming downtown. I don't do it very often.
I haven't heard too many people say that lately.
No, it's like, you know, the Preds games, things like that. You know, it's always fun to come down. But generally, you know, I got kids and I got all these things and I've got the I'm at the airport every day, it seems. But, you know, it's like, yeah, come downtown and see how vital it is and see how vibrant. It's really fun to see what Nashville's become over the last 19 years since I've lived here.
You've definitely seen some growth.
Yes, that is for sure. Think?
But I know this is an event that, you know, we love to help you promote, that comes up every year. And you got a great cast. Kevin Cronin from REO Speedwagon, Mike Reno from Loverboy, Wally Palmer of the Romantics, Jason Scheff of Chicago, John Elefante was with Kansas, Jason Derlicata of Journey, Six Wire, who we see all the time at Preds games. The music's going to be awesome.
The music is spectacular. And that's kind of, you know, in all of our, you know, market research back in the day, it's like, you know, with our skating audiences, it's like, you know, what's really important to you? What really makes you enjoy the show? And it's always been, they love to know the music. They love to be familiar with the music. They don't have to do the, like, the deep sort of, like, climb of having to kind of understand what's happening in front of them while they're watching these skaters. So to have familiar music matched with a familiar skater, you know, it really creates a whole another level of magic, especially live. It's, you know, the skaters love it. The musicians are only on a 4-inch riser at the end of the ice, so they have the best seats in the house.
Right.
And we have to rehearse it because the stuff the skaters do right in front of them take their breath away. And when they get kind of like, they lose their place sometimes. So we have to rehearse it so that they don't get lost and so they don't get mesmerized and distracted by the skating. And it really is a great marriage of movement and music. And it's just, if you've never seen skating live like that, especially we turn Bridgestone Arena into a theater.
Yeah.
We take the glass out, we cover the boards, we put, you know, seats all the way down to the ice. So there's no barrier, there's no obstruction. It's just skating, performance, music, ice, and the audience is right there on top of everything. And it's just magic.
How many years now?
This is our 9th one here. We did 18 in Cleveland. We did 3 in Knoxville. And this is our 9th one in Nashville. But what makes Nashville so unique is it's such a music town that we do multiple artist, you know, performances. You know, back in the day, we'd have one artist and we'd do their set list for the show. And it made it kind of fun. It was really great. We had so many remarkable people over the years. Aretha Franklin, and we had Liza Minnelli 1 year, and we had Cyndi Lauper and Michael Bolton and Michael McDonald. And we had so many artists over the years. It was just spectacular. And then it was all their set list. And then we'd go to Knoxville and we did a faith-based show there. We had Amy Grant 1 year, Mercy Me 1 year, and Michael W. Smith another year. And that was beautiful and amazing.
Yeah.
But Nashville is just, you go, you want to hear the songs, you know, you just want to hear the songs. And so over the years, we've had, you know, country artists, we've had, we've had faith-based artists, rock and roll artists, we've had just, you know, just name it, and they've been on our stage. And it's just really cool that I, especially this year, because this is, you know, these are my people, right?
Yeah.
You know, when I grew up listening to all these songs, it's like, I would have sold everything I had to get a backstage pass to any of these artists.
Right.
And now I get to, like, produce them. It's like, this is so cool.
Oh, that's awesome. Let's start the genesis of this. For those that don't know, you had cancer.
Yes.
And take us through the journey where you thought you would not see the next day.
Well, it started before that. It started, my mother succumbed to her cancer. She had metastatic melanoma, breast cancer, diagnosed in 75, and she passed in 77. And then it was right after she passed that I decided that I had to grow up because I was, you know, an 18-year-old little jerk. And then I was underperforming. And it was just, you know, I was distracted and I'm putting all the wrong things and all the wrong things. and her death sort of focused me. And I thought, I'm gonna grow up. I'm gonna be the person that she sacrificed everything to be. I'm gonna be that skater that she always thought I could be, and I'm gonna start raising money for cancer research. So right out of the gate, we started doing these. I ended up going from ninth the last year that she saw me skate to now being third in the country and 11th in the world the next year, just based on loving her and trying to honor her. And I was in the Olympics in Lake Placid, and all those years we're raising money for cancer research. We go back to Bowling Green, Ohio. We'd sell out the arena in like 5 minutes, and we'd raise $25,000. And then Olympic year, we raised $75,000, because I talked at the 84 Olympics, I talked Rune Arledge into sending ABC to Bowling Green to cover the event. We're at the bar at the Bosna Hotel in Sarajevo, Yugoslavia, and I go, Rune, I just got two words for you. And he goes, what? I go, Bowling Green. And he goes, what's Bowling Green? I go, it's like my last amateur performance. You got the, and so Dick Button was there. They were all there. It was really yes. cool. And we raised $75,000. I think this is really awesome. And then I was skating in Denver, and we decided to put on a show there post-Olympics. It was in May. Sold it out clean with the Denver Symphony Orchestra.
Wow.
They took half the proceeds. We took the other half. So we split $500,000. So $250,000 went straight to cancer research, and you know, now I'm crack addicted to raising money for cancer research. And so I would just do that wherever I could. And then 20 years after I lost my mom, I'm on tour with Stars on Ice, and I couldn't stand up straight anymore. So I went to an emergency room in Peoria, and the doctor there said, we found a mass.
Ooh.
And I'm like, oh, that's exciting. And he said, what do you mean? I go, well, no. I mean, look at me. No one ever has used the word mass in description of me before. This is kind of a big deal. And he goes, no, this is serious. And I don't know if it's benign, malignant, or something else, but you need to take care of this right away. And it was in that moment that I realized that I'm being diagnosed with the same disease that killed my mom. So the fear was just unbelievable. I saw myself suffering, succumbing, and then I thought, I'll never skate again. And I was like, why am I thinking about that? And it's like, and then you don't know how it happens, but I've talked to a lot of cancer survivors where this has happened, and it's that fear that's staring you square in the face flips almost to an opposite emotion of power, clarity of mission, and courage, you know? And I heard a cancer survivor once say in a speech, courage is only fear that said its prayers, right? And what is courage without fear,
right? Yeah.
So that, it was like, okay, game on, let's go. I'm going to be, I know I got something to face, and I know I got something to go through, but I'm going to be back on tour next year. And I was. 4 months of chemotherapy, 38 staple surgery, and I learned what it was like to go through cancer, and I was like, this isn't fair. We need to fix this. So what we did was, like, I asked my doctor, how sick am I going to get with chemo? And he said, moderate to severe. And I said, well, what does that look like? And he said, moderate to severe. And so I said, okay, I need to get that information from someone. And then I went on Dr. Google, like everyone does, and I couldn't find anything but medical journal papers with 12-syllable words, and it's sometimes three to a sentence. And it's like, I'm too dumb to be sick. This is not fair.
Right.
Like, so first thing we did was we created a mentorship program where we paired newly diagnosed patients with survivors. It's called the Fourth Angel Mentoring Program. It's thriving. It's at the Cleveland Clinic at the Taussig Cancer Center in Cleveland. And they pair 100 people a month. And it's caregivers, pediatric caregivers, and newly diagnosed patients with survivors. And it's unique information that you can't get anywhere else. The other thing we did was we created chemocare.com, which is a website where if you're going to go through chemotherapy, you go on chemocare.com. It'll explain how it's infused, like, you know, the process of infusion. It explains it, every single chemo drug that exists. It lists them all, and it explains each and every single one of them and how they work in 8th grade English and Spanish.
Love it.
And then at the end of the description, it gives all the associated side effects, where now they you can link to a side effects page where it teaches you how to manage your side effects. In 8th grade English and Spanish.
So this all came about with your journey.
Yeah.
Like, I needed to know this, and now...
It all happened through CARES. We took some seed money that I got from doing a performance on CBS, a comeback show, and we put that into the Cleveland Clinic, and they said, let's build an infrastructure around this.
Beautiful.
And so we changed the way people go through cancer. I was doing a speech recently for oncology nurses, and I was talking about chemocare.com, and There was probably about 100 people in the room, and they, a couple of them looked up. And I was like, do you guys ever use chemocare.com? Every hand went up.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't stop crying. Because it's like, wow.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me that the greatest gifts given are to those that will never know the origin of that gift, right? So they didn't know where chemocare.com came from. And who, I don't care if they know.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those cool things where it's like, it's actually getting into the hands that can really impact the next person's journey. But now, as a dedicated foundation for the last 11 years, we've just been laser focused on let's just elevate the whole research thing. Let's do everything we can to align with as many people as we can, to partner with as many people as we can, to elevate cancer research, to really focus on an immune response to cancer. Yeah. And not filling our bodies with, you know, chemicals. Like, I'm here 29 years later because of chemotherapy. I'm not a hypocrite. But I do know that there's a better way of doing things.
Yeah.
Why not do it? I mean, if there was, you know, if we're going to be stuck in, like, what works, then why do we have cars? We just ride horses, you know? It's like, if we're going to be, like, stuck with what works. Do you know how George Washington died?
I do not.
History class. Okay, we're in history class now.
All right.
He had an infection, and back then the standard of care was they would bleed the patient, and then new blood would come in and then kill the infection, right? They went too far. He died of blood, he died of blood loss.
Wow.
So sometimes the cure isn't the best thing going, you know?
Right.
So we're really there to invest in, and it's funny that 3 years after we invested in, that we said we're only going to invest in immunotherapy, the first immunotherapy drug hit the market 3 years later. And it's called CAR-T, and it's a T-cell therapy. They take the T-cells out of your immune system. They teach them to look for a certain protein, and that protein is the cancer cell, and it attacks the cancer cell. And your immune system is now destroying cancer. Our bodies created the cancer. Why can't we teach our bodies how to detect and destroy it? So that's our entire platform, and we've... Over the last 11 years, we've had 111 partnerships.
Beautiful.
Oh, that is fantastic.
No, it's remarkable. And we're a little foundation, you know, compared to a lot of the bigger ones. We're a little foundation, but we collaborate with everyone. And the last I checked, all ships rise with the tide.
That's right.
And so if we can, and you know, grow this foundation and continue to grow this foundation, and through events like this on Sunday where we need all the help and support we can get, the tickets, I mean, they started $27. Like, last I wanted to go see one of my favorite bands, they were $750. So
right.
It's like, this is something that is appropriate for the whole family. They'll all enjoy it. And if you've never seen skating live, you cannot believe the athleticism. You cannot believe
sure.
the speed, the power, and just the beauty of it. It's just an amazing sport that, you know, really isn't what it used to be as far as popularity, but it's every bit as good athletically and artistically as it's ever been. Nathan Chen's coming back to skate with us, and reigning Olympic champion in men's figure skating. We've got Gracie Gold. We've got Mariah Bell, who won a national championship in Bridgestone Ice before the last Olympics. We've got Keegan Messon coming back, which is, if you're in the front row, you get a little nervous because he's like, I call him an unguided missile. You know, he's just amazing to watch. Ryan Bradley's coming back. We've got so many great skaters, you know, to the sounds of REO Speedwagon, Kansas, yeah. Chicago, Loverboy, The Romantics, and Journey. And we're covering a Foreigner song and a Boston song. It's so good. I'm geeking out over this entire soundtrack.
This is my kind of music.
It really is. Yeah. And to see it come alive with skating in front of it, to know that all of it, like beyond the experience that you're having, all of it is to elevate cancer research to the point where my cancer 50 years ago had a 5% survival rate. Right?
Wow.
I'm 29 years ago. So that means, like, you know, 21 years after the 5% survival rates, I'm going through it, and it was 80 to 90% then, because a guy named Larry Einhorn in Indiana, a research scientist, figured out a cocktail that would take care of it. And now it's 95% survival rates for testicular cancer. And that's what we're doing. You know, it's like, you know, there's so many cancers out there that offer little hope. And we're here to, you know, punch those bullies in the nose as best we can. We fund, you know, glioblastoma research. We just partnered with Gary Sinise to fund chordoma research. And there's a lot of cancers out there that don't get the attention they deserve. And they're every bit as important because it's in my family now.
Oh, it is. We got you to about 1:45.
Sure,
so,
yeah.
So don't try to leave.
We'll continue with Scott coming up next. Again, Bridgestone Arena coming up Sunday. Rock the Rink with Scott Hamilton and friends in their event. We'll tell you more about that and have more with Scott coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.
All right, welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show, live at Bar Lines downtown Omni National Hotel. Our special guest with us this hour is none other than Olympic gold medal skater and just a good dude, Scott Hamilton. Can we call you that? Is that all right? Just a good dude?
Yeah, good dude. It's kind of nice, yeah.
Just a good dude. When you get on the phone, your big event Sunday at Bridgestone Arena, and you get a Kevin Cronin and a Mike Reno and everybody else, how do you go about this? I mean, I'm sure they don't say no, but to pull these guys together is pretty special.
You know, it's always hard. It's, you know, it's the week before, it's the Sunday before Thanksgiving, so a lot of people have made family plans and everything else. I mean, Mike Reno, his wife Catherine St. Germain is singing with him, Almost Paradise. You know, I remember that song, right?
Heck yeah.
Yeah, so he's singing that. She's singing that with, and her parents live in Nashville, so they're coming out a little bit early, so that worked out.
Always a connection.
But, you know, it's like I met Kevin Cronin when I lived in L.A. Some friends of mine owned a little sort of a nightclub that would bring in a lot of those rock acts, you know. And they said, hey, we'll go to dinner with you guys, but let's go to my son's baseball practice first. I said, that'd be great. And so we're going over watching these little kids play baseball, and there's a guy on the pitching mound of the coach, and he's pitching to these little kids. And I go, he looks familiar. He goes, Coach Kevin? And I go, is that Kevin Cronin? And they go, yeah, it's Coach Kevin. And it's like, he's your kid's baseball coach? It's like, that's insane. And so, I got to meet him like once or twice. But I was always a huge fan of the band. That album, High Infidelity, sold 10 million copies.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good. And so, you got Loverboy, who is like really relevant back in. I skated to Loverboy in the 1982 short program.
What song?
Turn Me Loose.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, da, dun, da, dun. Yeah, I hit my combination right there. But it was, it's all these guys I'm huge fans of. And Andy Childs of Six Wire and all the Six Wire guys. Yeah. They play with those guys all the time.
Fantastically
talented. And so I said to Andy, I go, I need your help this year. You know, we really need to get our talent up because, we're running out of time. And he said, yeah, so we got on the phone. We spent hours on the phone collaborating. Well, how do you want to go about it? Who do you want to get? How do you want me to reach out? And if it weren't for Andy, I don't think we'd have anybody except for Jason Derlatka, who and I, we've become dear friends since the first time he sang with the Journey guys.
With
Jonathan Cain and Neil Sean came in for the show a few years ago, and he was the first time he ever performed with them, and now he's a member of the band. He was just brought on, and so we've become really good friends, and he's an extraordinary talent, amazing guy. Jason Sheff, I got to know golf tournaments and everything else, Chicago.
Yeah.
He stepped in when Peter Cetera left and was with them for 30 years, and just so many of the hits. And it's just looking at these songs, it's kind of the soundtrack of my, younger self. But it's also songs that have really, really been proven the test of time.
Oh,
They're just relevant today as they ever were, and they're just fun to listen to.
Oh, they are. I know friends have gone to this year event every year. It's happened this Sunday at Bridgestone. And they say for a couple hours, we just shut off the world.
Yeah.
Because you don't see Olympic style skaters that you're going to have there on Sunday and the music. This doesn't happen every day in the world, and it's just the perfect spot. Isn't it cool to hear that?
Oh, it's the best. And, I'll go out and I'll watch. I'll just watch the audience. And I saw one music, he's been a veteran of the music industry for a very long time, and he's just, he's a hard critic, right? So we had one number with all these guys. It was a guy group number, and they came around, and all five of them sprayed the front row of the audience. And he got snow all over him. And all of a sudden, I look at him, and he's 5 years old. He's excited. It's just like, did you see that? It was some, and it's just the throws of the pairs and the guys doing backflips. And it's so exciting to see the music come alive in that way. And it's the only time it happens anywhere in the world. One night in Nashville, Tennessee, we'll never perform this show again, ever.
Wow.
And it'll never be televised. It's only whoever's in the building gets to see it.
Beautiful.
And it's, again, uniquely, we're the only people in the world that can do this because of it's Nashville. The Predators give us the building to, you know, do this amazing event. You
great
know,
people.
They're phenomenal people. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's Sean Henry told me recently it's David Poyle's favorite event. And, you know, Barry Trotz is there every single year to help us out. And you know, Sean's there, Danny Butler, they're all there. The whole family is
right there
to support us. And it's just extraordinary that that's what this town, I think the identity of Nashville is, you can go to a benefit every single night of the week here.
Yeah,
because
right
there's nonprofits, there's people that are extending to other people. And I've gotten to partner with and tour with, you know, tour the facilities and hands-on. And, you know, again, it's just that's what kind of town this is. And, again, it's just we're here to in our little niche of trying to change cancer forever and for the better.
Right.
And we've got, you know, one part of the show, which is my favorite. We call them the Overcomers. They're our skate champion kids. So we do Skate to Eliminate Cancer fundraisers. They're a peer-to-peer fundraiser all over the country. And it's like a 5K, but it's on ice. But we have ice shows, and we have 3v3 hockey tournaments, and we have all these incredible,
great,
you know, these events that we do to raise money. It's a peer-to-peer thing. So in Nashville, the top 30 fundraisers qualified to be in the performance,
ooh,
in the show. And the first year we did it as a pre-show thing. And I looked at it, and I was like, no, that deserves to be smack dab in the middle of the show. And so we right now they're up to, I think, they've raised over $62,000.
Oh,
just these kids, right? And they do it by Jackson Serbrook sells dog treats. He just he started skating when he went to Bridgestone and saw the show. One year he said, I want to do that. And he started skating, and now he's raised $60,000.
Wow.
Selling dog treats.
Look at that.
Unbelievable.
How old was he when he started skating?
Oh, he must have been like 6 or 7.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's probably, you know, 7. Probably.
I feel like I'm a lost cause at 38.
No, you're
38.
Not. No, you're let's just say gravity will not be your friend.
It's not. I think he's witnessed it. I got on skates and felt like Bambi. I had no balance.
I can help you with that. It's just what's funny about skating is it's like anything else. Do you remember learning how to walk?
No.
But now you don't think about it.
Not at all.
Like I would have to, you get on the ice and all those little muscles that, you know, support the big muscles, they're like, duh. So you gotta teach them how to like work to support the big muscles. And once you do that, it's like, you don't think about it anymore. It's just like walking. You just step on the ice and you start to skate.
And get it done, right? I want to ask you, in your journey when you got cancer, did you get mad at God?
No. I was like, I was fascinated. I go, what are you doing? And it became very obvious that he was saying, I'm interrupting your life specifically because I want you to not do what you've been doing, right? Which is all work and tour and next opportunity. And this, the tail was wagging the dog. And, you know, I wasn't living like I felt like I needed to be living, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he just sort of gave me a time out. And I just said, this is fascinating. And I'm just going to be fascinated by the whole process of chemotherapy. I'm going to be fascinated by, you know, how I endure it. I'm going to be fascinated by the surgery, which is a 38-staple surgery for a man my size.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's filet au scat. You know, it's like, it's like, you know, my Dr. Klein has seen parts of me I never want to see, right? But it's how's this going to work in your life? And if it weren't for cancer. Now, I met my wife on the 3rd anniversary of my diagnosis on the day.
Come on.
Yeah.
Wow.
And no, it's like I wouldn't have my family. I wouldn't have my children. I wouldn't have looked at them every single day. And it's I'm grateful. I'm grateful for, you know, Dr. Einhorn for finding a cocktail that would kill my cancer. I'm grateful for Dr. Bukowski, who was, you know, had the training to do it. I was grateful for Dr. Klein, who did the surgery and saw me through all the recovery stuff. I'm grateful for so many people in the healthcare industry. The Cleveland Clinic was incredible, the way they saw me through. The Taussig family, who the cancer center at Cleveland Clinic is named after the Taussig family, because they had cancer that much that they have a cancer. They lost their father to cancer. So there are our main supporter for this show every year. There are they every year they've given us almost $1 million for this particular event, just because they believe in the work that we do, and they've been with me from the very beginning in Cleveland all the way through to where we are today. And it's extraordinary that, you know, you just link arms with people and you allow, you know, it's like, you know, we pray that there's a modality of treatment for every single person that is, you know, that's diagnosed with cancer. I mean, that's what we're working towards. We're working towards a day where no one dies of cancer anymore.
Amen, brother.
We don't know how to get rid of it yet. We don't know how to prevent it yet. In some ways we do. Eat the right things, drink the right one, you know, just avoid a lot of the toxins, a lot of the environmental stuff. You know?
Yeah.
Why do we eat in this country things every day that are illegal everywhere else in the world? You know, it's like, I somebody answer that question, please. You know, it's like,
right.
There's so much about the way we live day to day that invites poor health.
Yeah.
And when you have, you know, it's a systemic thing, bad things can happen, right? Whether it be, you know, cancer, heart disease, whatever it is. So our business is to say, okay, if this happens, our job is to make sure that we check every single box we can to make sure that any person that's diagnosed with cancer, there's an answer to their challenge, to their episode, to their journey, and that they can get out the other side and just have a new gratitude toward life.
Yeah.
I always tell people, do you know how you truly know you've survived cancer?
How's that?
It's a great question.
When you get upset in traffic. Because you're back to sweating the small stuff. It's like, you know, what am I doing? I'm angry at the guy
perfect.
That just cut me off. It's like, I'm alive. Okay, let's go there. And I'm going to be 2 minutes late. Ho-hum. You know, it's just all that stuff. You know, it's like anytime anybody flips me off in traffic, it's like, okay.
Yeah, thank you. Good day.
You know, but it's like, you know, little things. You know, and this is something I encourage people to do. It's just those random acts of kindness.
Yep.
Like I was in Publix, and I was behind a lady, and she was checking out, and I could tell she was wearing a turban, and I could tell that, you know, she was going through chemotherapy. And she, you know, she was about to pay for her groceries, and I said, "May I?" And she says, "Oh no, no, I got this." I go, "No, I'm a survivor." And she goes, "Oh." I go, "Can I pay for your groceries?" And she said, "Yes." And so I'm big on eights. Like yeah. I was born 8/28/58. Like I did figure eights.
Yeah.
Like 80s were a big time in my life. And so I got the check, and it was $88.18.
Get out of here.
And it's like, thank you, Lord. It's
wow.
Like, you know, it's like all these little God winks and all
yes.
These little things that just happen that are just so extraordinary that, yeah, there is a God, and he's totally there 100%. And to answer your question, was I mad at God? No. Grateful. Grateful for every single knockdown, every single get up. I was grateful for every single failure and every single, because they go hand in hand. I was last place guy in skating for, I don't know, a decade. I don't know how long it took. I mean,
really?
It took forever. I went to my first nationals on the little novice boys level.
Yeah.
And I fell 5 times in a 3-minute program.
Oh.
Yeah. Dead last. The next year I went back and ninth again. Ninth. They were out of 10. Another kid was there. He wasn't very
how
good.
How bad was he, huh?
I don't think he kept skating. I think he quit.
Joe, we said we weren't going to tell that that was you.
Right.
But it was like I was that last place guy, you know. So it just sort of was one of those things where I had ability. I could do stuff. But it was like, what am I? You know, I just didn't know how to put it together. And so, you know, we fail, we learn. You know, it's like anytime you take up anything, you're not going to be proficient day one.
Right.
You know, and when I wrote Finish First, it was a book I wrote, 2018. It was one of those things where we're writing it, and the person who was helping me put it together, Ollie Fallon, she goes, "How many times do you think you've fallen down on the ice?" And I went, "Stand by." and I pulled out my phone. I was doing the calculator thing, and I go, minimum 41,600 times.
Minimum.
Minimum. Yep. And so she goes, ow. And it's like, no, but when you get up 41,600 times, those failures don't have the same identity. You know?
Amen.
You just get up, you know, and just get
up. Not how many times you fall, how many times you get up.
Yeah.
I love that. We'll have more with Scott Hamilton coming up next. Chasing Big Joe at the Omni, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, here on this Thursday at the Omni Nashville Hotel, continuing our conversation with Olympic gold medalist Scott Hamilton. Always enjoy having you on with us. I mean, you truly are one of the greats.
Oh, man, thank you.
We were talking a little bit earlier, and you may have mentioned this when I had to step away, but the Hockey Fights Cancer coming up on Saturday. Have you seen Soros' mask, what he's going to wear yet?
No,
It's very cool. It's honoring some members of the Preds family that were affected by cancer.
Wow.
Willie Donick's wife, Erin, her picture's on there.
Man, she was a light. It's devastating that she's gone. You know, it's just awful. I just loved her so much. And that
leads me into my next question. I lost my dad 4 years ago to cancer.
I'm so sorry.
How much impact do those that have lost people have when supporting you and supporting these organizations? Because I feel like that, you know, those of us that have gone through it and lost someone, I mean, it's I'm like you. You're a survivor, but I want to see more survivors now because I've seen what the loss is.
Well, I lost my mom when I was 18 years old, and 18 is way too young for a boy to lose his mom. I think we can sit here corporately and say 18-year-old boys are knuckleheads, you know.
Yeah,
they need their moms, right?
Absolutely.
100%. So, yeah, that loss is, you know, and even if it's 5 years ago, it doesn't matter. When you lose a parent, you're 8 years old again, you know, and it's just like you can't negotiate it. It's just a loss like no other, right? Losing a child, I think, is the most painful thing you can go through. I think that's why St. Jude has been so incredible at, you know, changing the world the way they do. But, you know, when you are a co-survivor, as you know, when your parents are going through it, and then when they're gone, it's almost like, well, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Well, you feel helpless, right? And in that, you know, we try, and we have a lot of volunteers. We just try to bring people along with us to say, help us. And, you know, what you're doing today by allowing me to, you know, promote this event, you know, maybe a drop in the bucket, you know, but still a drop in the bucket. There's how many drops did it take to fill that bucket, you know,
right?
But it's still more than was in there before, right? And that's what does it. It's just like all the extensions of kindness, all the extensions of generosity, of time, of whatever you can put into it, you know, of passion. However that works, it really honors everyone that's going through it now. And it gives them hope that they're not just doing this by themselves. You know, it's such a lonely process because, you know, you feel somewhat different than everybody else in the room. And you just, it's so unique. You know, like so many people that were in the audience last year that just found out that they're going through a cancer, they're back this year as survivors.
Ooh.
And we celebrate that. And we don't let that sit. You know, We're just, you know, but it's those types of losses that put me, I wanted to be a fundraiser.
Yeah.
Losing my mom, void. How do I fill some of that void? Not never going to fill all of it,
no.
Right? But it's like I want to try to help the next person so maybe they don't have to suffer the same loss. Like if I can prevent an 18-year-old boy from burying his mom, win. Even if it's one. But if you do the math, if you're part of funding a research project that now creates a proven treatment for a cancer that was untreatable, you can't count the lives that have been saved.
No.
You can't.
Right.
It's impossible because now it's check. Let's go on to the next one.
That's right. On down the line. On down
check.
The line. Yeah.
Check. And so, I'm so sorry for the loss of your father, but it's like the only reason I do what I do is because I lost my mom and I survived.
Yeah.
I've had a birthday my mom never got to have. In fact, I've had 18 birthdays my mom never got to have. And I've had two birthdays my dad never got to have. So it's, you know, I'm here. I'm on house money.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm playing it hard.
You know? That's great.
You know, you brought up eight, you know, in like numbers. Yeah. What's and it hit me like the moment after he was gone. He was 34 when I was born. I was 34 when he died.
Wow.
So it was just like, okay, there's something with that. But yeah. It just, you know, and it's hard to believe it's been 4 years. But, you know, and I and Joe can, you know, attest to this. I think me being vulnerable and talking about it,
yeah,
you know, is kind of my way of trying to.
It's so important for anyone that's listening.
Yeah.
Especially if they're going through it or if they've been through it, to know that they're not the only one.
Yeah.
And that they, that, you know, this is something that matters to all of us. And we've got to link arms and we've got to make a difference and we've got to do the best we can. And again, it's just every small thing, you know, is built out of, you know, are building blocks to create big things.
Right.
You know, it's like I look at a brick in my house. It's one brick. But my goodness.
Yeah.
If that brick went there, bad things are going to happen, right? You know, so we all serve in whatever way we can. And, you know, by you helping me promote the show on Sunday and trying to talk a few people into buying tickets, however many we can, I've never in my pro career or even in my amateur career, toward the end, especially when I figured it out, I don't overpromise and underdeliver, you know?
Yeah.
This is a great, great, great event. And it's worth supporting. It's worth getting behind. And it really is making an impact, you know. And we hope to grow. I told my board in the last board meeting, I said, I don't see a reason in the world why we shouldn't be one of the top three cancer fundraising mechanisms in the world. Let's work towards that.
Yeah.
And everybody's eyes got real big. Like, oh, man. How are we going to do that? I go, because we can.
Right.
Because we can. And if we don't think we can, we won't. But if we do think we can, every next step becomes logical. So do I think cancer is curable? Yes. Now I do.
Yeah.
When I watched my mom go through it, I didn't. But now I do. I realized early detection.
When you went through it, did you think it was?
Well, I was told 80-90% chance.
Yeah.
And I figured, well, I'm probably in better shape than, you know, 25% of the world,
right.
You know, so I guess I'm still in that range. But I just felt in my spirit that I was going to be okay. I just needed to control my space and I needed to be fascinated by it. And so my nurse treated me like an 8-year-old. She figured it out quick. She would decorate my chemo bags with Snoopy stickers. My second bag after 4 hours of infusion, my next 4 hours with a bag covered in Mylar. Different colors every day.
Right.
My Band-Aids were SpongeBob and Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
And I was promised, if you're good today, there's a banana popsicle waiting for you in the nurse's freezer.
That's what.
I'm 38 years old, and it's like, she's treating me like an 8-year-old, and it was awesome.
I love it. Is it okay that you won a gold medal? I mean, you're immensely popular. Is it okay that people know you through Blades of Glory?
Yeah, 100%. Most people don't remember I was even in it, which is fine with me, too. But it's, you know, it was I got a million stories from that. But one of my favorite was where, you know, I went to hang out, you know, sort of and watch them shoot some of the movie. And I was there for a scene that they did 12 different punchlines. And the crew was howling with laughter. And I'm like, covering, because I thought that whatever was said was, you know, going to show up in the movie. They wipe all that and then they revoice it later on, right?
Oh.
So the crew is laughing their faces off, which helps the performance and everything else. And so I got to know them a little. I spent a lot of time with Will Ferrell and I spent a lot of time with John Heder. And I knew Craig T. Nelson way before all of that. So it was really fun, you know, to kind of be on set. And then I'm back in my little trailer area waiting to shoot some of the commentary scenes. And they, one of the directors came and said, hey, we need you on set. And I go, what's going on? And they go, Will just wrote a little scene. He wants you in it. And I was like, really? And so it was the interview scene at the Kiss and Cry when they got done with their first big performance, right? And so that's the one where a woman comes by with a bottle of champagne, and he just chugs it, and he slaps her on the rear end as she walks away. And you know, John Heater's like, we were just really focused, and we really tried to put on a good performance. And he's like, we're riding this train. And, you know, it's just like, and I'm just like, what am I doing here? It's just, this is unbelievable. What a gift that was. It was so much
so
fun.
Funny.
And yeah, it's still one of my favorite movies. And I think it's still, if it's not like number one best Will Ferrell movie ever.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the top three.
Was there no crowd there? I heard you do it every one time. There's nobody in the arena. It seemed like everybody was there, but you did that scene with nobody there, right?
Nobody was there. we were up in this little box area. Like, it looked like a little desk kissing cry thing with me and Jim Lampley. And we were doing our little, you know, scenes, and there was just people on the ice moving boxes around and, you know, everything else. And you know, all of that. We got to see some mock-ups of the performance, but we weren't calling anything live.
Right.
Everything was sort of done, just trying to remember what was. And one of my favorite lines, and it's so bad, it's just so bad, it's so bad, was when Amy Poehler and you know, she was on the ice with her husband at the time.
Will Arnett.
And he's Heimlicking her, and she's spitting out sleeping pills. And it was JFK in Maryland. That was their performance. And my line was, now there's an interesting take on American history. And, you know, and so much of it was just so bad. I mean, everything was just off, but... You know, it's a funny movie,
yeah.
and it's I got to do the press junket, which was hilarious, at the premiere, and of course, you know, you get all the answers, what's next, and it's like, well, I'm thinking about, you know, I'm waiting for some people to step aside, you know, Brad Pitt to slow down a little bit, and I'm going to step in and take this spot. But, you know, it's so fun to be able to experience these things. And
love it, man.
It's been a very full life, you know, just crazy.
That is wild. That
was 18 years ago?
2007.
Really? Oh, my goodness. My choreographer was the head choreographer on that show. And so many of the skaters that were in it. My favorite, like... Sasha Cohen, if you can remember, she was a silver medalist in Torino,
mm-hmm.
right? She was in first place after the short program, and she came second overall, and she's a beautiful skater, just elegant, classy, gorgeous, just stunning. And her part in that was Will Ferrell reaches down and pulls out his jock and throws it into the stands. If you haven't seen the movie, there's a little bit of that.
Right.
And she catches it out of midair, and she puts it right up to her face, and she says, I love you, Chaz. And it's so opposite of everything ever. And the Nancy Kerrigan scene where, are you an official here?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just... It was, and you know, Brian Boitano and Peggy Fleming and Dorothy Hamill and Lisa Marie Allen, who was on the 80 Olympic team with me. I mean, they're all in this movie in different ways, in different
Jenna
places.
Jenna Fischer from The Office.
Yeah, she played the girlfriend, and she was really sweet, very quiet to be around, but very sweet, very talented and amazing.
You live the life of a rock star, Scott.
For a minute, I was a movie star. Yeah.
Hey, on IMDb, you get billing before Andy Richter, so that's how it should be.
Well, I always tell people, I don't know how I'm going into my 10th Olympics as a broadcaster because I have a face for radio and a voice for the hearing impaired. So.
Wait, 10?
This will be my 10th Olympics.
What was your first one?
My first one was Albertville. Christy Yamaguchi won the gold medal.
Yeah.
And then the second one, I was paired with Vern Lundquist back then. Second one was... Tanya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan in 1994 in Lillehammer, and then
so you were there for that.
Yeah, I was the short program. Okay, when Nancy and Tanya were going to be on the ice competing for the first time.
Right.
At the end of the day, was the fourth most watched television program in the history of television in the United States.
Wow.
And my producer gave me an impossible on camera that I only had one take to do. Everything was pulsing. My temples were thudding. You know, have you ever had it when you're so nervous?
Right.
I was sweating through my suit for this stupid on camera. I had one take only. Got through it. And I was like, and Vern says, we're covering the Olympic Games. We're not covering the media circus. We're covering the Olympic Games. Every skater on this ice deserves us to tell their stories. We're going to cover the Olympic Games. We're not covering the craziness of all this, you know, stuff that's been happening. And so that's what we did. And it
that's
was
awesome.
It was an amazing thing. And then 98 in Nagano. And then NBC took over. 2002 was in Salt Lake. 2006 was in Torino. 2010 was in Vancouver. 2014 was in Sochi. 2018 was in Pyeongchang. 2022 was Beijing. Nobody really went. I did it out of my basement in Brentwood.
Yeah.
They gave me a studio. They set up a. I had a spare bedroom, and there was no furniture in there. And we put up a step and repeat behind me. And we bought a desk at Target, and they gave this remote control camera that this technician named Bob came in and created this little studio in my basement. And so I'd get up. We'd have a production meeting. I go make breakfast for my kids. They go off to school. I go downstairs, do the Olympics. And then after I was done doing the Olympics, I'd go upstairs, make breakfast, work out, you know, kind of watch the events. And then the same thing the next morning. It was amazing. And now number 10, which is Milan. I'll be going over there, and I'll be sitting with Mike Tirico.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Love it.
Mike Tirico is one of the nicest human beings I think I've ever met.
Yeah, we've had him on a few times, and he's always been great.
And he's so talented.
Oh,
you know,
he can
and
do
so
anything.
Approachable and so humble and kind. And
he's no Chase and Big Joe, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty tough.
It's funny. There's not many broadcasters anymore like a Vern or an Al Michaels or Mike Tirico that can literally do any sport.
Yeah.
You know, you ask them to do.
I mean, Vern Lundquist, you know.
Uncle Vern.
Do you realize that they would put anybody that they really wanted to develop as a broadcaster, they would pair with Vern Lundquist?
That's a wise move.
He built Terry Bradshaw.
That's right. That's right. He did.
You look at Gary Danielson, all the SEC stuff, and just all the stuff that he did at the Masters, and all. You know, anytime anybody sits down next to him, they just get better. And he's so humble, and he loved figure skating. He did his book tour a few years ago, and it was really fun. They said, he'd always get asked this question, and he said, if you could do any sport one more time, and you could sit next to one of your broadcast friends, what would that be? And he always said the Olympics with me.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he's the best guy. And he just loves everyone. And he cared deeply about every single skater that ever took the ice. And he loved the music, and he loved the art form. And he loved, and he'd always say it. No one ever said it before him. Alone on the ice. I heard that, and I go, thank goodness I didn't hear that before. I could get in my Olympics. I would have wet my pants. It's just crazy that it's just so, his voice is so perfect for dramatic situations and everything else. And it's been such a blessing,
So real quick, with Mike on this Olympics, will you be in the
studio?
You'll be in the studio. Okay.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get over to the rink to watch some of the events, but I have a feeling I'll be in studio with him.
Very cool.
A lot, pretty much every day. And my youngest son's going over with me.
Nice.
And I just want you to say a prayer for my family. Tomorrow night, my oldest birth son is in his first MMA fight.
Oh, wow.
He's been training to be in the UFC, and tomorrow's his first official MMA fight. And so we're going to Cookeville for that. And big weekend. My son's first fight, and then all the skaters come in, and we put the show together, and Sunday, and it's a big weekend.
We will say a prayer. I hope that goes well.
I think it will. When he got into this, I stopped disciplining him. I just figured, what's the point?
Right. Probably smart.
If he doesn't get his way, he'll probably just choke me out. My youngest son's going over with me to the Olympics, and he's gotten very involved in skating, and the United States should do really well. And every single one of those skaters at medal, I'll bring them back next year. If we're able to do a number 10 at Bridgestone Arena, I'm going to be bringing back some skaters, and I'll tell them to bring their hardware because this is going to be a good Olympics for the United States.
That's awesome. Well, Scott, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Oh, are you kidding? This has been an hour.
This has been so much fun.
I hope I didn't kill your show.
No, not at all.
Well, at least I gave him an hour off the Titans, so that's good.
God, right?
You did us a favor there.
Nah, you know, hey, everybody out there, the pendulum swings both ways.
I know. And hopefully I'm waiting for it to come back the good way. But yeah, we'll see. Coming up Sunday at 4 o'clock, Bridgestone Arena. You can get your tickets. Just go to bridgestonearena.com. Scott, good to see you.
God bless you guys.
Absolutely.
Thank
you too.
Much.
Scott Hamilton joins us. We'll come up and come back and wrap up hour number two next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.